You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb. And our guest today is John Preston, a landscape painter and a very illustrious and well-known landscape painter in the region. And he's got a show that's opening. When is your show opening?
This Friday.
At Olson-Larsen Gallery in Des Moines, which is the main gallery in Des Moines, where the best artists show their work. I don't know where to start with you. I think we could do about three shows with you, because you've been a painter as long as I can remember, and you've inspired me as long as I can remember when I first came. Well, one of the times I came back to Fairfield, I realized there was this artist named John Preston here and was doing incredible pastels that blew my mind.
Well, it was at one of the first shows you did at Gallery 51 East, mm-hmm. that had a John in the hall facing the
right,
stairs.
Right, but I'm talking about 1980 or something. When did you first come to Fairfield?
Oh, gosh. I got here in 79 to start school and graduated in 84 and started painting full-time late 86, early 87, and I've been painting basically since then.
And so you were doing pastels mostly, you were doing oil and pastel at that time?
At that time I was doing, well, actually I was doing still lifes.
Well, the first thing I remember was still lifes and pastel. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then the next thing I knew you were doing, and that would go back to probably mid-80s, I guess, right?
Yeah, that would be the earliest work I did, because right after I graduated, I didn't have a car, so I wasn't able to get too far from the house.
You had an apple in front.
Yeah, you know, and I could, and I was doing other things during the day to come up with the rent. So you could set it up and leave it, and as long as it wasn't too perishable, it would stay for you. And then I got a car, so I could get a little farther out, and didn't take so much time to get to where I needed to get a view. And so then I kind of transitioned into oils for that. And then for some reason, went into pastels again for doing the landscapes. I think that was probably because they were fast and easy to do on location.
Would you do a pastel out in the field and then come back and do an oil version of it ever?
I don't know if I ever did it in that sequence. Usually I think I did it in the reverse. Wow. Do a little quick sketch in oil and then do a bigger piece in pastel. But most of those first ones were, because it was like not too large, 18 by 24, so you could kind of do that outside without it blowing away on you, or you could actually even do it from the front seat of the car.
But you did both work from life, sitting mm-hmm. in the front seat of the car, and you worked from photographs too sometimes?
Yeah, I'd either set up on location, and then I started trying photography for a while, and at first didn't quite have the hang of it because I wasn't used to looking through a lens. And got the hang of that. So that became useful for anything that would happen quickly and that was going to change before you could get any of it down, or if it was quite far away, you know, and you couldn't get back to look at it again. And so it was a variety of things that I would use, drawings, things done on location, photographs, memory and imagination even. Sometimes I would just drive around and compress a day's worth or 2-3 days worth of seeing stuff into whatever still kind of vibrated in my memory.
where you get so familiar with the elements, don't you? Such as the sky and the clouds and the earth and the various rural landscapes and the buildings and stuff. You have a vocabulary to work from.
Yeah, although you do tend to, the downside of working from memory is that you tend to naturally select some things over other things. Mm-hmm. So they keep recurring.
Yeah, no, I know all about it.
So eventually you say, oh, I'm painting the same picture over and over again. You're kind of in the Cezanne territory with the doing the mountain over and over again.
But there's something charming about that too.
It's
almost like a spiritual practice in a way to do the same thing over and over again.
And you kind of
find
like
deeper and deeper levels of it.
You own it after a while.
Right.
So it's although there can reach a point, I think, where you sort of overthink them. Mm-hmm. I got into hay bales pretty early on. Round bales, because coming from the East Coast, you don't see, or back then you didn't see much of those. You saw the little square straw bales. So I was very fascinated with those, and I just did them because I liked the look of them. And then I started to think about them, well, what could they mean? What are they, you know, symbolic of? And I thought, oh, it's a field rolled up on itself and all this stuff, you know. And then they just got kind of wooden. So I gave up on them for a while. And now I kind of get back on them and from time to time. A lot of them this year, certainly. But
I know the first things that I saw were more minimalist and had a low horizon and a big sky. The earth and the sky, which appealed to me very much. I like that kind of thing. Yeah. But it seems like your horizon has gotten higher and higher over the years.
Well,
you got more into all the stuff going on the earth.
Yeah, the longer I'm here, the more my gaze has come down. Uh-huh. Because I wasn't used to seeing much sky coming from the East Coast, more suburban, urban environment. So I was walking around sort of looking up all the time, and as I live here longer, the gaze comes down. And of course, you get years that are sort of monochromatic, monolithic skies are just last couple of years the springs have just been sort of gray and rainy, so you don't see a lot. And it seems the weather has changed significantly in the time that I've been here, or just the
what do you mean by that?
What you see when you see it. Well, it used to be the storms. I like storms because they're interesting shapes, interesting colors, that kind of thing. And they used to come in during the afternoon, and then they would be gone by dusk, and you would get the stuff like this. And it would be, you know, kind of, I don't know, not strong rain, but now they just, they come in late in the day, and they're howling. You know, and the rain goes sideways. So you don't, since it all happens kind of after when the sun is up, you don't really see as many interesting clouds and stuff. So yeah,
that's interesting.
And it seems like, I guess it's a year-to-year thing, but I love thunderheads and anvil clouds and that kind of thing. And it seems like we wind up the last few years under them rather than out from them. Mm. Being able to see them, because they're goodness, thousands and thousands and thousands of feet vertically that you're looking at. And so you have to be 20 miles or so away to get the whole thing in your field of vision. Mm-hmm. And there's been some nice ones this year. So
where did you come from before you came out this?
Mostly Maryland.
Were you in an urban environment?
Yeah, kind of the Baltimore, Annapolis, Washington corridor. So
what I'm thinking here is that you seem to have embraced the rural and the rural agricultural and everything we've got mm-hmm. here. And mm-hmm. I wondered if that was a new world for you.
Oh, yeah, brand
new.
From
the urban
brand new
environment. So you were able to kind of look at it objectively and to fall in love with it in a way.
Yeah, it was different than the day-to-day, although it did... As I think back on it now, it did sort of resemble the eastern shore of Maryland, which had I stayed back there, that's probably where I would have decided to live. Tidal area between the ocean and the bay, and it's flatter than Maryland normally is, and there's not as many. It's small towns like here, and not a lot of tall trees and buildings and anything that, that obscure the horizon line. So I mainly it was the horizon line thing, that being able to see that,
right,
that, that I enjoyed most when I got out here. And like the bales, and different forms, different shapes, things like that. Silos, which really there's not many silos anymore. That's all kind of changed. It has changed. The landscape has changed significantly over 20 years or so. Fence rows and utility poles used to be a big thing, and silos used to be the main verticals, and now they don't use silos anymore, or not much. And so you don't see as many of those anymore. And now the new vertical is the cell tower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, they're lovely.
Yeah, it's, well, I've done a couple pictures with them and worked mm-hmm. them in.
So and someday they'll look back and see those
yeah.
old
towers. I remember those just old like we cell look at towers.
The old windmills. Yeah. Yeah. You don't see many windmills anymore, do you?
No, no.
That used to be the silo and the windmill was the iconic
1920s Marvin Cohn kind of yeah. Grant exactly. Wood sort of thing. So if you see one, it's some sort of you know yeah. Living History Farms or some sort of nostalgia thing. So.
Or a 200-foot windmill that.
Yeah.
Doesn't...
Oh yeah. Well, now we got the wind generators, which yeah. I think are actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it? they're amazing.
When you see a big field of them out west there. So, but I have done one windmill picture, one, and but it was one that was had gotten mangled in a tornado that had come through in 2003. Yeah, and then it bent the blades around in a very interesting sort of shape. Mm. And so I did a small picture of that.
Well, I will say for our audience that may have just tuned in that this is Icon Art Radio and we're interviewing John Preston, the well-known landscape painter from, you live in what, in you live in outside of Fairfield?
Yeah, south part of the county. Yeah.
So he's a Fairfield person, but he shows all over the region, and he has a show opening at Olson Larson Gallery. We tried to say this earlier, but I think we never got there. What are the dates of the
this
show?
This Friday, the 9th, is the opening reception, and it'll be up through the month.
So okay, that's for 9th of September 2011, in case you're hearing a rerun.
Okay. So the Iowa is known for its landscape painters. As being the director of Iowa Contemporary, I'll tell you that landscape painting is the main genre of the region, and John, being extremely modest, just never toots his horn, so I'll have to toot his horn for him. He's one of the most illustrious of the many landscape painters. The Federal Reserve in Chicago, which services the five-state region, he was selected for Iowa to be presented there as the Iowa Landscape Painter, Agricultural Painter. And well, won many awards and is quite a special artist.
I have to say, although I'm not known as a connoisseur of anything in particular, except perhaps technology, I was blown away by that painting that you had at Gallery 51.
Oh,
that it was an archetype for me. It was an example of what composition is. I mean, I kept dragging people into the gallery and telling
and you know
them to look
this
at this.
This is the one of the church where you got married.
Oh yeah, Mount Moriah Church.
It's from your collection.
Yeah. Oh, that's a gorgeous spot.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, it was clear that among the artists represented at that show, it was that one painting really made the whole show for me. It was quite exciting to look at.
Well, that one's an example of where I worked little sketches on location, little pencil sketches, actually, even. I mean, I think there were maybe 3x3, 4x4 of the land and the building and the road and stuff. But the sky, I imported from basically just off the end of the driveway. And although I, if you were to draw a line as the sky was moving, it would have come over that particular location at some point. And so that would be an example of kind of using something I'll do is something that'll change fast or wouldn't stay around long, and I'll put it on a, I kind of call them, just for lack of a better term, tops and bottoms on paintings. And a lot, it's very rare that you get a, you go out and set up and you have a magnificent sky with a perfect composition in front of you. Usually it's one or the other. And the best skies you always see when you're on your way to Walmart or something.
Right.
To get dog food.
And they don't last very long.
No, and then, and then you realize if I drive to where I think I would like to see this on top of that, you know, it'll all be gone. So, and you kind of, either if you've got a camera, you can take a snap of it, or you just kind of sit there and look at it and try to soak it in and, and memorize it. But skies are wonderful because you can really, really play around with them. And because they're somewhat more, they have a definite structure to them, but they change and morph, and you can pull them and push them and do things with them before they look odd.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
But they do follow their own rules.
Oh, my goodness,
you know, there's actual physics involved.
Yeah, there's
certain things you just never see together.
Yeah, or at certain altitudes or whatever, you know. Yeah. And you can even play with that. I mean, I'll tend to pull things down in a little closer. It's kind of ironic because you want to give a feeling in the picture. If you're trying to create a sense of large space, sometimes you actually have to kind of shrink or distort in the form of shrinking things to make it look larger than it actually is. So I'll bring like the base of a cloud down closer than it would normally be. But not so much that you would think, it doesn't look right. you wouldn't have an ice cloud at a water cloud level, that kind of thing. And actually you deploy some distortions on the land too, but to the point where they, just before they look like weird or, you know, not quite to the cubistic state or anything like that.
Well, you've been a professional painter making a living selling paintings for many years, a modest living. Do you still get as much excitement out of the next painting as ever? Is it an ongoing quest, or do you feel like it's something of a job in a way? You sound excited and engaged, there's always this thing of artists wanting to explore and expand, and you're following a thread, and you have to keep it going because it's your reputation and all of this. Is there any tension? Yeah. You sometimes feel like just breaking out and doing something completely different?
Well, yeah, but I tend to do it very incrementally.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's a, like a learning curve or a time lag between when you try something and the point at which you actually become conversant with it and can use it the way you'd like to use it. So I'm actually trying to work small town scenes in slowly, alleyways or little street scenes.
And I have one, I have to say, and I love to look at it every day. And that was a little bit of a departure for you.
Yeah,
it's like a watercolor of the downtown.
Yeah, and because there's a lot of interesting shapes, and part of that came from just that stretch a few years there where the weather wasn't particularly interesting, you know, so I'm looking for contrasts and colors and shapes in other places. And I, you know, you're in town all the time, and I think, my goodness, here's something I've been looking at for years and haven't done anything with. So I did that, and I'm starting actually my first medium-sized oil of a location on the off the square there. And so that's something that's kind of working. And I've done a couple now that are sort of out in the rural area like I would normally paint with. They're a little closer into the small towns, like views of where the little road that will drive into the town and you'll see the water tower and maybe a building or two. So it's just kind of, there's more stuff out there than I've actually dealt with. So I'm kind of trying to explore those. And there's even times a day that I feel like, gosh, I've never really done anything with. Early in the morning, but rather than looking at what the sun is lighting up, looking more towards the sun and that kind of backlit atmospheric kind of things. I've done one or two that I feel like I got what I was after, but so that's a new kind of a thing. But there's more out there than you could ever do in a lifetime. It's just from wandering around your own area. You know, I kind of quickly found out that years and years and years ago that you don't have to go that far, because I would get in the car and I would drive all day and looking for, you know, interesting thing, and then, you know, after so many hours or so I would find it, and then I'd get it home and work on it and realize that, well, this looks like something like 2 miles away or something like that. And it finally dawned on me that I was driving until the light got to a certain point, and then everything looked great. Yeah. So now I can, I don't have to go as far, I guess, good with the gas prices being what they are. But I mean, I'd be, you know, driving all over Yarmouth, Mount Union, you know, west of Ottumwa. Goodness gracious, it was crazy. Just to find a gravel road that looks exactly like the one I live on. So.
But you need to get there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that would be the thing. So, yeah. Or, you know,
I learned to wait and let it come to you.
Yeah, and then I feel, well, okay, those times a day that I thought weren't interesting, now I realize I wasn't looking in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of rotating a bit more than I used to do. So there's loads of stuff out there, and you say, well, what am I looking at? Am I taking a kind of a long view or a medium view or a close-up view? And I really haven't done medium to close-up too much, so I'm playing around with a little more of that. So there's just endless amount
of
stuff.
So different. I mean, every perspective is just so different. I often talk about how the brain structures this stable, you know, rectilinear environment that we're sitting in, but what's happening on the retina isn't anything like that.
No.
If you look through a lens and wave it around the room, everything is all different kinds of foreshortening and weird distortions and geometric stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Nothing is parallel to anything. And yet, you know, we know that it's smooth and flat and the corners are straight because they have to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the ability to perceive a straight line is a kind of a miracle of interpretation.
Mm.
And there are lots of situations where people actually can't perceive straight lines. The brain isn't doing that particular operation correctly anymore. And it doesn't particularly matter. But, you know, when you try to, it's like Rembrandt seeing the colors that are actually there instead of the colors that the brain is telling us are there, because they're not the same at all. And, you know, the brain sees it as an illuminated three-dimensional scene. And in that context, this shade is this color. But if it isn't a three-dimensional scene, if it's just flat, and it's not an object illuminated by a light source, then those colors are interpreted differently. Mm-hmm. The brain sees them as completely different colors. And we're just, so there's, you know, you could look at the same, you could paint one subject for an entire lifetime and never really get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. I'm always shocked at how scale and distance changes for you under different lighting conditions. Whether things are illuminated head on or backlit or side lit so that they're casting shadows and things like that. And I've looked at things that I've painted several times from several different times a day or lighting conditions and stuff. And it's funny how I'll paint something bigger on one picture, smaller on another, even though the relative amount of distance you're looking at is the same. It seems like certain kinds of illumination kind of blow things up or shrink them down on you.
Well, like the giant sun at sunset. Which
the lensing
effect.
It's
not giant.
It doesn't get bigger and
smaller. It gets a little bit bigger, but not anywhere near as much as it looks like it has.
But
Yeah, the moon.
Oh my goodness, proper
harvest moon or something, and it's like twice the size it's supposed to be, but it isn't.
Well, and then there's this, what your mind is doing, which I have to, as a, you're a teacher too.
Yeah.
The students blow everything up. I mean, their whole experience is of what they're focusing on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I have to teach them to see that in the context of your whole field of vision.
Yeah, you draw a great big eye and then try to build a head around it.
Some teeny little thing that's very small in the distance. And blow it up, and then they'll paint the whole painting.
Oh yeah, well that was the main problem I had with when I was first trying to get used to photography, because I would go out there and my attention would be way out at the horizon, and those things looked enormous, and I thought I'd see all this fantastic detail, some little building or clump of trees or something like that. And I take a photo of it, and I get home and I get it processed, and where is it?
it's just a little detail, kind of
straight line across the bottom, and it's just how a lens sees and how the eye sees. And
listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.